And welcome back to a special episode of the BAM Entertainment Podcast. I will be your host tonight, Katie Gilstrap, and with me I have Judge, Jury, and Executioner Michael Thomas.
Hi, I'm trapped in Landon's basement.
We have the Wabam anime expert, Isaac Wolf.
I'm yawning.
And the Death Note fanatic who's a little bit of everything, Landon Bell.
That's right. And first of all, Lakeith Stanfield. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay then. And our special guest, Revenge of the Fans anime expert and Flash fanatic himself, Brandon Alvarado.
I am justice.
This is guys.
Tonight's going to be a little bit, or morning or afternoon, whenever you're listening to this. This episode is going to be a little bit of a special one because we have Landon, the Death Note fan, who is insistent that this movie is somehow good. And then we have Brandon and Isaac and also Michael to a sense, but Michael's kind of neutral. So anyways,
Michael's not here. He's just trapped in Landon's basement.
In Paul's gym.
It puts the lotion on its skin.
Oh, that was weird.
That's Michael's fault.
That's my job.
So we're going to have a couple rounds of debate. Brandon and Isaac are going to try to convince Landon that he is wrong. Landon will fail. And we all go home happy. So, first up, we have Landon with, I don't know the topic. So, Landon, hit me with what you got.
Okay, well, basically, we are here to discuss why Netflix's Death Note is actually a really good film. And you can listen to what Brandon and Isaac say. I don't care. You don't have to actually take their opinion as fact. I'm going to give you facts. Fact number one, Lakeith Stanfield is amazing in this movie. Number two, Willem Dafoe is amazing in this movie. Number three, Margaret Qualley is amazing in this movie. Number four, the soundtrack in this movie is amazing. And number five, the ending of this movie is amazing. So that's five amazings right there off the bat. Can't argue with these inarguable facts. Now you can discuss plot, you can discuss Nat Wolf if you want, you know, all of these things, but these five things are like a constant among everybody who's seen this movie, even people who don't like it. They're like, oh yeah, all these things are true. And so I'm going to hit you with facts.
So let's talk about your facts. I can understand that you have performances individual by different characters that work. But if we're going to say that this movie is a good piece of media, we can't say that is a good Death Note movie, because it's not a Death Note movie, at least to what the source material is capable of presenting, and in comparison to what's been done before with Death Note in Japan originally, in terms of the anime, in terms of the manga, in terms of actual live action versions. So yeah, I agree with you. Willem Dafoe was actually pretty good in the fact that all the effects and his voice is remarkable. Like, he can sneeze and he will win an Oscar with the voice that he has. That's just Willem Dafoe. I can agree that the actor that played L did a decent job. But I can't agree with you that it's a good Death Note movie, because the themes that distinguish Death Note as a series, as an anime, and the reason of why Death Note is so beloved by otakus, none of that is present in this movie. The only thing that's present in this movie is the book, Ryuk, and certain names. Nothing else. What do you say, Isaac?
I mean, it's all fine and good about having a good cast, but then I guess The Counselor or the Dungeons and Dragons are good movies by default, because Jeremy Irons is just extremely hysterical in that movie with his overacting, making it so enjoyable, even though the movie has so many plot holes and bad writing that it's not even funny. Anyway, yeah, I mean, it's one thing to look at the Death Note adaptation as its own movie, but I have to agree with Brandon here that it doesn't work as a Death Note movie. Would we have had this conversation? Would it been a original movie and not based on anything? Maybe not. But at the end of things, Death Note is based on a beloved manga and anime, and going by the core of the movie, it doesn't work as a Death Note movie as a whole.
Okay. I look at it a lot like adaptations of comic books, where some adaptations are so wildly different than the original. Honestly, like, Guardians of the Galaxy is not a bad example. Like, the original Guardians of the Galaxy was very different than the film. And people could argue that's not Guardians of the Galaxy because it's a comedy, but, you know, it is. It contains the elements of it. Death Note's different. So Death Note is Japanese, chiefly Japanese in the original. Like, it takes place in Japan with Japanese ethnic characters, and the entire premise of it is chiefly Japanese, all the way down to the Japanese death gods. So if you bring that to America, you have to change a lot of stuff to make it fit in America. And so that's what they did. They changed a lot of stuff. And the movie was instantly accused of whitewashing, despite having a, you know, semi-diverse cast. And like Lakeith Stanfield was interviewed about it, and he's like, I don't see that at all, because, you know, they're trying to fit this story into America. They're not trying to, you know, be discriminatory towards Japan. They're trying to tell a different story. And so I like that the movie takes risks. It tries to be something different. And so it introduces Light as a high schooler in Seattle, and it introduces L as this like elite code cracker, like sleuther guy who was schooled in New York. And then it introduces Ryuk as being an import from Japan. And it's kind of cool. Like, I like the way I also like the way that director Adam Wingard handles the entire subject, because he's got this really great eye for cinematography. Well, not necessarily him, but his cinematographer does. But as the director, he is very good at guiding his cinematographer to capture the story. And in terms of the various Netflix films that have existed, I feel like this one is one that really stands out.
You know me by now, especially after we did a video about the Death Note movie on your channel, that for me, the problem isn't that it was the race. Honestly, the Death Note movie, as a core story, could be done as something. You can write about a kid in Sweden, you can about write a kid in Russia, you can write a kid in Germany, just name it, because it's such a story that I personally think could fit anywhere, because this is a death god. Gods doesn't have a specific place. So they could just move around from country to country if they so please. It's sort of like if the author continued could do sort of like a Death Note to be an anthology series with a new character all the time. Sort of like we discussed in that video. But my problem with the Death Note movie isn't that it isn't Japanese actors and all that. You know that by now. It's the fact that at its core, on how it handled the themes and questions and all that, that the Death Note is bringing up in the execution. In the, sorry, not in execution. How should I put it?
Portrayal?
Portrayal. You can have a different coat of paint, but still get the same portrayal of the source material. I mean, if you have, even if you have read the Guardians of the Galaxy comics, when you see Guardians of the Galaxy on the screen, you can see, okay, that surely is Guardians of the Galaxy, even if there is changes. When I watched the Death Note movie, I saw an original piece, not an adaptation of something that was originally was created from something earlier, in with this case being a manga. You get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying.
So, and it's so funny because as you're talking, Langdon, I'm making notes, and as soon as Isaac opens his mouth, he's going over all my notes. So we're thinking in the same wavelength. So thank you, Isaac. So I'm just going to follow up on what you're saying. The big thing about Death Note is that Death Note is not a teen drama. Okay, it is highlighted by a teen in the manga, but that's not what it is. That's how they treated this. That's the first thing I'm gonna say. The second thing, I completely agree because with him about the idea of God or gods, as in the Shinigamis, or gods of death, is that gods are universal. So the fact that it was moved to America, it was not a reason. Because here's the thing. If you actually watch the anime, it's a very globalized Japan that you have. The police operates very similar to what you see in American movies. I would even say that Death Note is one of the more Americanized animes that you'll ever see because of its angle of detective and sleuth work. It feels like an anime detective story thriller. It doesn't feel Japanese to a degree in the way of the writing. Even in the way things and themes are portrayed. So you moving into America is not an issue. It being in Japan is not an issue. Race is not an issue. L, I am going to say this. L, I agree with the actor and you, because L, they don't really tell you where he's from, ever. He might even be American, for all you know. They never specify that he's Japanese. The only people that they specify as Japanese are Light and his friends and his family. But they never specify where L is from. And that's the idea. L is just an idea. He is a manifestation of what quote unquote pure justice should be. And one of the biggest things that for me affects the movie of Death Note is the fact that going a little further in what Isaac was saying is that it doesn't handle the themes of the anime, which is what makes the story of the anime and the source material so beloved. This is a story about the meaning of justice, the philosophical meaning of justice. That's why I started the anime going, I am justice, because that's like a very cheesy quote from Death Note, because this is what it explores. It explores the themes of justice. It explores the themes of power. And how power can corrupt even the most benevolent of people. And you don't see that. It is a story, like what you see in the Netflix movie is a kid that's bored, a kid that finds a way to create justice, but then you find a kid that's too scared to use this power for quote unquote what he thinks is right, which is completely the opposite of what Light Turner does. Light Yagami in the comics, he finds this set power and he becomes engulfed by it. He becomes fueled by it. And he keeps going to even more extremes and more extremes. And the beauty of it is how you find Light's descent into corruption so fascinating, and how he is so brilliant to prevent getting caught, that you want, that you even follow him and admire him when he's become the villain of the story. That's what makes this anime so powerful and so beloved. It's pretty much Breaking Bad in anime form, but it's better than Breaking Bad. So us seeing this, and even the way it ended, you really don't see these things explored. All they picked up, like, it's a very superficial, like, here's the thing. I'm going to end with this so you guys can go to your counterpoint. You can go to your counterpoint. What kills me most about the movie is that they made the typical American mistake of taking an item that's recognizable from the source material and using that as a justification to prove that they can do set story when they miss the whole point. The Death Note is not what makes the Death Note movie a Death Note movie. The Death Note is what corrupts Light. And what corrupts Light is what you want to see. That's the story that's interesting. That's what makes Death Note Death Note. That corruption, that downward spiral in the writing. Now, I know we can't do the whole anime in one movie, even though they're working on a sequel. But for example, I'm going to say this. If they're able to explore this in the sequel and really take this to heart and explore that theme, then who knows? Maybe I'll love the sequel. I don't know. But this first take on it, it's just not a Death Note movie. Because when you can take an element like that out of the movie and the movie still quote-unquote works within its own world, you're doing something wrong.
Okay, this is dense. It's weird. I agree, but I also disagree. So, like, everything you're saying about it being mostly a globalized Japan and that kind of stuff, like, I agree. And the stuff you're saying about the character being, you know, mostly a story about corruption, I agree. It's just that, like, all of these things don't necessarily affect the quality of this movie. It affects the quality of the original. And the original is not trying to tell the new one. It's not trying to tell the original story. It's trying to tell a new version of that story. And, like, I feel like the movie captures that corruption, but from a different angle. It doesn't, like, the character of Mia is the one who is corrupted, not Light. Like, Light is changed by the Death Note, but she's the one who's truly corrupted by it. And I like how the movie twists that from the way it was in the anime. It's slightly different, not entirely what you expect. And it makes the third act really solid, I feel like.
I can see what you're saying about Mia being the one that exemplifies corruption. Now, let me present this argument. Let's say we call it a Death Note movie, right? Here's another mistake that I believe American filmmakers or at least American screenwriters when they're trying to adapt foreign material do. There are certain things that make characters memorable that transcend the medium. For example, I'm going to give you an example, and I think it's the easiest one, and I think most people can agree. I believe Ezra Miller is an amazing actor, okay? But nobody can deny that the version of the Flash that he played in Justice League is not Barry Allen. Now, I'm not saying that because I watch Grant Gustin in the Flash show. I'm saying because the essence of what makes Barry Allen unique, the essence of what makes that character work, is nowhere to be found in the script that was written for Ezra Miller. Ezra Miller has the acting chops to play Barry Allen as the character demands to be played. What we saw in the movie theaters was not Barry Allen. So if you're going to give me a Death Note that doesn't embrace Light's journey, that doesn't, and even if Mia gets corrupted or not, perfect. But if you're not going to give me a Light that embraces Light's journey in the source material, then give me a character that I've never seen before. Give me a character that's completely new to this world. Maybe it's the first time the Death Note makes it to America in modern times. Give me that. Give me an original story. But don't give me a half-baked version that is supposed to make me feel that, oh my God, I'm finally getting an American Death Note. I'm excited. Because I, as a viewer, as an otaku, I'm going to look for the things that make the original work. But don't give me an original character and story and call it Light.
Okay, I feel like with the analogy you just gave with The Flash, that it's a house of cards you built. Because what is to say that Ezra Miller's Flash is not Barry Allen? Like, I want to know what about him is not Barry Allen. I hate Justice League. I hate that movie. It's a bad movie, in my view. Lois Lane. But...
Boys.
Boy.
Landon, we about to shut this thing down.
No, no, no.
We haven't, Katie and I haven't said anything for like 20 minutes, but don't.
No, no, Landon, finish your thought. Finish your thought, Landon, because I do have a very good answer for you.
Okay. Go for it. Go for your answer. Really, all I was going to say is that movie is bad, but Ezra Miller's Flash is half the reason that that movie is at least watchable. Okay. So why is he not Barry Allen?
Let me ask you this before I answer that question. What makes Barry Allen Barry Allen?
His backstory, his character arc.
Yes and no.
Who he is as a person.
The last thing is what makes Barry Allen Barry Allen. Here's the thing. Barry Allen, okay, is an example of focus. He's an example of drive. He is an example of a person that has a vision, something that he needs to accomplish. In Justice League, the material that Ezra was given, you have a Barry that feels lost, bored, lonely, and really doesn't have a motivation to do something. Barry is someone that ever since his mother died, he is driven by being able to find out who murdered his mother. I need to free my father. So because I have to do those things, I'm going to become a cop. I'm going to become a CSI. I'm going to do everything I can to understand what happens in a crime scene so then I can solve this case that nobody wants to pay attention because I know my dad is innocent. That is Barry's inner drive. Not only that, he's thinking, I want to be able to aid the victims. I have so many people that have been wrongfully accused, or they're suffering, they don't know how to move on. I want to be able to provide justice to those victims that want justice. That's Barry Allen. And keep in mind, all that is Barry Allen before the lightning bolt. So the fact that he gets struck by lightning simply enhances and gives him more tools to reach this dream of helping people and bringing justice for his father and the people that need justice. None of those elements that make that character, that person, were present in Justice League. That's why I can't say that's why I gave the analogy that they called him Barry Allen, but it wasn't Barry. It wasn't Barry. He was a character created for comic book relief. That's all it was. Now, I'm not saying that the Grant Gustin version of Barry is very good. But it's the closest thing to our comic book Barry Allen. And we're talking about comic book Barry Allen throughout the years, not just a particular version, because that is that person. Now, if you're telling me that they caught his whimsical happy self, yes. But Barry Allen Flash is not much of a joker, per se. He's not comic book relief. He is the man with the plan. He's the one that tries to figure stuff out. He's super hyper. He was, in terms of demeanor, he was more Wally West than Barry Allen. But that's why I can't say that he was Barry. Because of those, because here's the other thing. When you have a character has an essence that's undeniable. That if you remove that essence, the character falls apart. That's what happened to Ezra Miller's Barry Allen. And that's what happened to this Light Turner, which is what brings me to that argument. If you're going to give me this story, that's fine. But as soon as you call him Light and you tell me he's Light, I'm expecting to see Light. I didn't see Light. I saw something else. And that's why, in my book, the movie doesn't work. That's one of the main reasons. Because, for example, the only, I would say, character that was 100% faithful to a degree was Light's father. He was hands-on, that person. And Ryuk. But then Ryuk, it was to the T, physically and in terms of character, the same character. But the others, it's debatable.
See, this comes down so much to how people feel about adaptation, because with adaptation, you have the ability to tweak and change and modify and tell new variations on a story. For example, Blade Runner, the original Blade Runner is very different from the movie. The original Blade Runner is a book called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And if I'm not mistaken, Deckard has a wife in that, and it's just wildly different from the very cerebral, introspective, thoughtful version that Ridley Scott created. You could make the same argument. Many people could make the same argument that that's not Rick Deckard.
But not necessarily, it is. Though. But that's the thing. I'm sorry. But that's a. I gotta disagree with you there, because I have actually read a good chunk of the beginning of Why Androids Dream of Electric Sleep, and the correct, it is an adaptation. You're right, but Rick Deckard is ripped in terms of who that person is. It's ripped directly from it. And Blade Runner is just an adventure within that universe. So the story is original, but the universe is the same and the character is the same. What changes is the story they're telling.
And again, I see your point, but I think it's like, it comes down to a matter of interpretation about it. And with the character of Light, you still have the fundamentals. You just don't have the dark descent. And I feel like a big part of that is because they tried to shift things over to Camilla's character, which she's new. She's not in the original. There's a character in the original named Misa, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
No. Mia is Misa, to a T.
Okay.
No, Mia is Misa.
Okay, all right. So she's a version of Misa.
Right. It's the American Misa.
They shifted that dark side over to her.
Right.
Which to me feels like that very American movie sort of thing, where a lot of times they'll try and do something in the first movie to set up the sequel. The end of Death Note really tries to set up this dark, really dark descent for Light. Like, he goes to some extremes in that last 10 minutes. And his dad just straight up asks him what kind of person he'll become, leaving us with the impression that that dark descent is coming.
And to that end, I would say, if they show me that in the second movie, I will feel better. I will enjoy it more. But so far, they didn't stick the landing in the first. And there's so many things I just can't call it Death Note. It fails to deliver what is expected. But I agree with you. But then again, let's talk about something different. And Isaac, if you want to say something, I'm gonna shut up now. Dude, I forgot.
I honestly don't know what to add on right now. You
okay?
Much said everything I was thinking about saying. So go on.
I'll try and stay out of your head, Isaac. Now what I am gonna say is this: if we're gonna, let's open a little bubble in the multiverse, because I'm not gonna admit there's a good Death Note movie. So let's open a bubble in the multiverse, and let's say that this is the light that's gonna become the light of the original source material. Then what a waste of a movie if everything was just set up. I wanted to see a story. I didn't get that. Why waste the whole movie on setup? Why not give me that character? And here's the other thing. The other thing about Light that's interesting, he has his backbone. Now, I get it. You could say that everything that he went through is part of him developing that backbone, that inner strength to make certain decisions that he lacked. And now he probably has it because Misa's gone. And you can say that, and that's fine. But
a lot of movies do this sort of thing, though. That's like Man of Steel. Man of Steel is wildly controversial because it does the same thing that Death Note does. It takes a character, it tries to reinvent them, and then it ends with the character everybody wanted. Now, don't get me started on BVS. I hate BVS because BVS...
Landon, you lost this argument.
Huh?
You lost this argument.
No, but keep in mind. No, I'm sorry. Finish what you're
saying. Yeah, I hate BVS because BVS undermines that development at the end of Man of Steel, which is Man of Steel. We've had an entire movie that tries to and gives us Superman at the end. BVS says, "Oh, by the way, Superman's bad," blah blah blah, and then tries to end with the same Superman we wanted, except now he's dead. That's not fun. If the Death Note sequel does the thing that... if it does the thing that BVS did, it'll suck. If it does what a Man of Steel 2 should have done, and actually gives us Light Turner, then it'll be amazing.
No, but then here's the other thing, though, is that you've left L in a completely different place, where they made certain decisions with certain characters that I wouldn't have done, or that you can't really do if you're going to stick the landing with Light's journey, because if you're going to tell me that we're going to skip L altogether, because L can't be L without what's Or he can't be that functional as Watari. So they killed him really quick. It's like the Full Metal Alchemist debacle. They pretty much tried to tell 68 episodes of a story and ruined a 2-hour movie. But that's different than Star altogether. I don't have that much to say, but I am gonna say this. I can see the things that you enjoy, and I can agree in terms of adaptations to a degree, but I gotta tell you, man, it's hard for me to accept this as a good or even a Death Note movie, because even when you adapt something, you do not sacrifice your characters. Because when you can change every single detail of the story you're telling, the setting, everything, you can even change the characters' names. But if you can serve the character's essence, the story is going to make sense. And you'll be able to make the source material or your new story work because the character's essence is untouchable. That is something that you cannot trade. You know what I mean? So they made that decision here in Death Note, and it made the movie fall flat, in my opinion, because they play with something that you don't play in adaptations. That's why, for example, if you would have told me that I would have seen Light, Yagami, and Misa, and just those two characters and then see that development of L coming into play and all that, change everything, the environment, the music, because all those things are okay, because that's the beauty of an adaptation. Everything is open game except a character's essence, and that's what the Death Note played with, and that's why I think it fails.
I think it begs a good argument too, like, to what degree will American audiences accept that without the setup? Because Americans are a picky bunch, and the themes of Death Note are so not rotten, but they also are rotten, because we're talking about people who have been given the power of death and willing death at any time, and it being a power that is easily abused. And considering, especially the political implications of everything in America, like, to what degree do you tell that story with an American character and still keep audiences invested?
And here's the beauty about it, though. You said something that's very peculiar. Especially in this day and age in culture, an American Death Note would actually work, because of the height of social media, of injustice, and the fact that it's a teenager. That's why Death Note works. Because it is the naivete, it is the ignorance of youth that makes Light Turner's intelligence and sense of power so interesting. Because he's just a kid. You know what I mean? He doesn't have the power to change the world in a standard adult social sense. But he's given this power from down below to actually exert power and dominance without going through the standard social structures. Because he's young, because he's a teenager, that's why it works. So it works perfectly in America. Look at all the people that are disenfranchised. You give the, for example, you have all these states that accept the death penalty. You have all these states that do and all those that don't. You put them in a state that accepts the death penalty, and then you explore from that angle. The fact that he's young makes it work. Even if you're in a state where it doesn't accept the death penalty, the fact that he's young, because this is someone that's malleable. So you're giving someone excessive power to define the world, but this person is not completely formed. So the power corrupts him and makes him something different that's detestable by some people and detestable by others. Because that's the other thing. That's the fact that he's young also allows the concept of justice to be interesting, because you're talking about how he understands justice. As a young person that hasn't lived through life or hasn't developed a full psychology, his idea of justice is if someone does wrong, they have to pay. He is not seeing gray. Which gray, or that understanding of gray, comes with maturity. That's why he's so easily broken by this power. So I would say, I mean, it would work perfectly. It would be a dark tale, but it would work perfectly. Mainly, you can get away with this story because he's young. Now, if you're talking about someone that has a position of power already, it can work, but it'd be a lot more controversial. But because you have a young teenage high school, it works. It's easier to digest, and it will work perfectly in this audience.
See, I was talking more in terms of accepting it because of if you tell a super dark take on it your first time around, then there's a lot of people who are just going to compare this to high school shooters, and then you have a controversy. But which again, Netflix is no stranger to controversy. I mean, they made 13 Reasons Why.
But that's what this is, though. But that's what this is. This is a controversial anime. It's not an anime. That's all you can. And now I'm sorry, but you actually put yourself in a corner, because that's tax another reason why the version is. Because this anime presents its ideas and doesn't ask for forgiveness. And I believe that a movie that represents the same themes should do the same. It's just like saying Deadpool can't work if it's not this or that. The PG-13 Deadpool was okay. I saw it. I made a review on the site. But the fact that we got an R-rated Deadpool, that made it work very well. And I think we just made everyone fall asleep, Landon. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm ready for closing arguments. Judge, jury, and executioner, what do you think? Who won?
Landon lost because he compared it to Man of Steel, and he already knows how I feel about Man of Steel.
Wow.
Don't be biased, Judge. I won, right?
No, you won, because every argument you had was my argument against Man of Steel.
Wait, you don't like Man of Steel?
No, I do not. But
that's a topic for another episode.
So I'm just going to say this. Man of Steel is my favorite DC movie. I'll leave it at that.
Oh, we're going to have to do this again.
And on that note, Isaac, where can we find you on social?
You can find me at Emblemaniac on Twitter, and you can find me on Twitter at Emblemaniac on social media, and me writing anime reviews for Wobam Entertainment.
Michael, where can we find you?
You can find me at KGilstrap13.
You can find
it.
Michael at MTTJR_15. Landon, where can we find you on social media?
You can find me at the Bellman, that's spelled B-E-A-L-L because my couldn't spell. And you can also find me with a synthesizer pointed at my head by the lead singer of Air Supply, because that's the only good explanation I have for why I love this movie so much.
Okay then.
That's the hill you want to die on.
Brandon, our special guest. Thanks for joining us again, by the way.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Where can we find you on social media?
So, I'm Brandon Alvarado, the Scarlet Fan. You can find me at Lexan, L-E-X-A-N, at Lexan Alvarado on Twitter. You can find all my anime movie reviews, Flash rantings, and my Flash on Revenge of the Fans. Revenge of the Fans is also home to my Flash column, The Final Lap. And in the future, you can join me and Isaac as we talk all things anime in the future at Amateur Otaku RTF. And you can see, and we'll have a podcast coming out soon. We're really excited about that, right, Isaac?
Yep.
We're going to talk about a lot of good stuff. So we got a page on Twitter at Amateur Otaku RTF. We have a page on Facebook, and we'll let you guys know when the podcast comes out. You're going to really love what's coming up with Amateur Otaku.
Awesome sauce. Yes, Backdoor Pilot. That's a perfect name for this. And you can find me at KGilstrap13 on Twitter and Instagram. You can also find more anime, comic book, Star Wars, reviews, features, opinions, and news at wabamentertainment.com. And make sure you check out Revenge of the Fans, our partner site. And thanks for lending us, Brandon. Everybody have a great night.
Peace.
Peace.
Thanks for coming.
Landon's wrong.
You've been listening to the Wabam Entertainment Podcast. For more from Wabam Entertainment, visit us on the web at wabamentertainment.com. You can let us know what you thought of this episode on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at WabamENT. Thanks for listening. We'll see y'all next time.